This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
The Israel report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Boker Tov. Anthony, how are you doing?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I wanted to start the week with a great piece of sporting news to try and start out on a positive note. We've seen the Israeli rhythmic gymnastics girls perform amazingly, winning medals all around the world in the Olympic Games and in various international competitions. But I was watching the performance of the five ball event, five girls doing rhythmic gymnastics with these red balls, throwing them in the air, throwing them to each other. The precision, the accuracy, the rhythmic nature, the flexibility that these girls show was incredible. Agam, Arina, Abigail, Taya, Sophia, and Karen, gold medal at the World Cup event in Baku in Georgia. In Azerbaijan. One of the things that really fascinates me about this, besides how incredibly flexible they are and how they go about these gymnastic maneuvers almost without breaking into a sweat, but one of the things that's really amazing is the fact that they throw the ball at a certain height so that all of the balls come down at exactly the same moment. All catch the ball absolutely simultaneously. And if anybody has the chance to watch the video of that performance, it's really, really amazing. So great news for Israel, gold medal at the World Cup in Baku. And we hope that they will go on to do some really amazing things in the future. There are a few other competitions coming up. So that's the good news to start the morning with.
So, Anthony, obviously last week with the roller coaster of emotions of being Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaSmot in Israel, we very much back to business this week. And as we alluded to earlier in the show, it was a busy, busy weekend in Israel. And we're obviously going to unpack some of those items right now. So as we can see that the ceasefire in Lebanon has all but collapsed.
Yeah, I mean, the Prime Minister over the weekend gave an order to the IDF to expand its operation in Lebanon and to respond to some shameless attacks that were carried out by Hezbollah against Israel, the northern part of Israel. And I say shameless because there had been this ceasefire that had been begged for, literally, by the Iranians to apply to Lebanon as well. And of course, Hezbollah, we know, is an extension of the Iranian regime. It is a proxy army in Lebanon. And the Iranians had said to the US, there will be no ceasefire in the war in Iran unless there is also a ceasefire in Israel. Initially, Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Trump were both reluctant to agree to that. Ultimately, President Trump did come back saying, okay, there is a ceasefire. Israel is effectively prohibited, those are the words that he used, from firing upon Hezbollah. But the reality is that even though the ceasefire was pronounced in name, I don't think there ever really was a ceasefire. Israel decided that it had drawn this so-called yellow line, which is a protection zone. It's a line that runs almost along the Litani River, which is a few kilometers into Lebanese territory, in order to try to create something of a buffer zone between the Israeli border and where the Hezbollah operatives were stationed. And within the yellow zone, Israel was very, very busy to clean out all of Hezbollah infrastructure, all of the weapons, all of the tunnels, everything that was found in that area. Israel was busily cleaning out, as well as responding to fire from Hezbollah, which continued even beyond the yellow line. So I don't know that there really was anything of a serious ceasefire. I think Israel, IDF, certainly pulled back on the attacks that they had been carrying out during the time of the ceasefire. Hezbollah was quite clear that they were not adhering to the rules of the ceasefire, because they were very proud to announce how many times they'd attacked Israel and how many times they'd attacked IDF soldiers during the time of the ceasefire. So finally, over the weekend, there was an incident, the straw that essentially broke the camel's back, and the prime minister decided to order the IDF to expand its operations in Lebanon, effectively to go back to what was before the ceasefire was declared. Unfortunately, in the meantime, Israel has lost another soldier in Lebanon. And this was a particularly harrowing event because his girlfriend, who is a surveillance watch soldier, one of those who sit watching TV screens that are connected to cameras inside of Lebanon to watch over what the enemy are up to. She is one of those who was observing activities in Lebanon and actually witnessed the event that killed her boyfriend in real time. So that was a particularly harrowing event for her. And what happened was that some IDF soldiers had been injured. A rescue team had been sent in order to rescue those soldiers who'd been injured. And then a Hezbollah drone was sent in to attack the rescue team. And that is unfortunately where our latest casualty fell in Lebanon. And of course, we are heartbroken as always when we lose our soldiers. Every single one is really important. And we are very heartbroken at this particular event. And we are most heartbroken at the harrowing event that that his girlfriend had to withstand during the time of doing her job, watching what was going on, and in the process actually watching her boyfriend being killed. 19-year-old Sergeant Idan Fuchs was the casualty, and of course our heart goes out to his family and to his friends and to his girlfriend in particular, who is of course not taking things very well. All of this really means that the ceasefire that might have been in name only, because I think that really there was an ongoing activity, Hezbollah attacking the IDF, trying to clean out things, albeit in a slightly reduced fashion. But that all seems to be over now, and it seems to me that all bets are off on the northern border of Israel, and that the battle against Hezbollah will be continued without any further holding back. I think that we can now see that there is no option, however, but to continue and clean out as much as possible. The Lebanese government, we've seen, is unable to control Hezbollah. We knew that that would be the case all along. We've tried to empower the Lebanese government and the Lebanese army as much as possible, but even that currently is impossible to do. And a lot of it is down to the support that the Iranians have provided to Hezbollah, the weaponry, the money, the support, the training, everything else, all comes from Iran. We should be under no illusion that this is certainly an extension of the Iranian regime.
Yeah, so moving further east to Iran, and we see that I saw this morning that, or actually last night already, that Trump canceled the trip of his son-in-law Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff to Islamabad in Pakistan for negotiations. So is Trump waiting for the Iranians to call him to renew negotiations?
Well, the events over the last few days have been quite amusing and concerning all at the same time. We saw the Iranian foreign minister get on a plane and go to Islamabad. So everybody was calling this as being the Iranian way of saying, let's sit down and talk. And that's when President Trump on Thursday jumped up and ordered Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner to head to Islamabad in order to continue the negotiations. Well, before they could even get on their plane on Friday, the Iranian foreign minister had left Islamabad. And so that was when President Trump looked almost like he had a little egg on his face, because he'd ordered not only Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, but originally even J.D. Vance was getting ready to go to Islamabad. And then all of a sudden, the Iranian foreign minister left Islamabad. And so that was when President Trump came up saying he's canceled their trip. They're not going to travel 18 hours all the way to Islamabad with nobody to speak to. So it looked a little strange. Then what happened was the Iranian foreign minister flew to Oman, which was quite an interesting trip, because let's not forget that Oman is the country on the other side of the Straits of Hormuz. And so that is a very strategic moment, the Iranian foreign minister flying to Oman. No sooner had he spent a few hours in Oman than he flew back to Islamabad. And that moment, the Americans all of a sudden thought, well, maybe the talks are back on again. This time around, however, they kept a little quieter and didn't make it look quite so ridiculous when the Iranian foreign minister, a few hours later, re-embarked his plane and apparently has now flown to Moscow to meet with President Putin. So this is quite an interesting trip for the Iranian foreign minister to be making, all under the nose of the American regime. Everybody can see exactly these stops that he's making all around the world. We know probably what is being discussed. We know that Putin and the Iranians are certainly cooperating to some degree or another. The Russians have been providing drones to the Iranians. They've also been providing intelligence about the location of Israeli and American forces. So the cooperation between Russia and Iran is certainly concerning. The discussion between the Omanis and the Iranians certainly would have centered around what's going on in the Straits of Hormuz. This morning, we understand that Iran has provided something of a proposal to the United States for the possible reopening of the Straits of Hormuz. However, this is a very, very interesting tactic they've adopted, and they've said, let's find a way to reopen the Straits of Hormuz immediately now, and let's delay talking about the nuclear program for another day in the future, not right now. Now, if I was calling things for the Americans, then I would have said no to that proposal, because at the moment, the one thing that the Americans do seem to have in their armament, which is seems to be concerning and valuable to the Iranians, is the blockade on the Straits of Hormuz, because we know that the Americans have been stopping Iranian oil from coming out of the Straits of Hormuz and thereby putting a strangle on the Iranian economy. And some people have said that this is the Americans applying an anaconda move to the Americans, to the Iranians, I'm sorry, to try to somehow strangle their economy so that the Iranians will be forced to the table. Now, the Iranians are very well known for being smart negotiators. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the Iranian foreign minister has even published a book about the art of negotiation. And so it's interesting to see who ultimately will come out with the upper hand here, whether it will be the Trump administration, who seem to have made a few missteps along the way, but at the moment seem to be using their power over the Straits of Hormuz very effectively. We will see now, I think that this is a very critical moment, if the US administration does agree to reopen the Straits of Hormuz, and I've little doubt that the Iranians have offered them something that they almost can't refuse in return for reopening the Straits of Hormuz. We do know, for example, that the reopening of the Straits of Hormuz will also lead to the oil price going down significantly. That is certainly in the interests of the American administration right now. They are suffering with the high oil prices. Sure. They're not doing well domestically at home because of the huge increase in oil and energy bills that Americans are suffering. So that will certainly be something which the Americans may be interested in. But I just wonder whether the nuclear program issue is not going to ultimately trump, you'll pardon my pun, are going to ultimately be more important than reducing the oil price. I guess that we will know later today or tomorrow as to how the US administration responds to this offer.
Safe to say, lots of moving parts there still. So, as you know, in South Africa today, we're celebrating a very historic election that took place in 1994, but there is a very historic election coming up this year in Israel. And we see that Bennett and Lapid have now united. So in the next couple of minutes, just before we go to news, if you can just give us some insights of what's happening there.
Yes. So just to remind listeners that we are in an election year in Israel. The election needs to be called according to the 4-year period needs to be called before October of this year. Now, the power of calling the election effectively right now rests essentially with the Prime Minister, because he has enough support in the Knesset to be able to call an election almost at any time. The view is that it's highly unlikely that an election will be called during the summer months. It's generally not the case. A lot of people are away, and it seems to be not a good time for an election to be called. So it looks as if, though, our election will go down to the wire in terms of taking place sometime in September or October. September, of course, is a very busy month with all the holidays, the Chagim, and so it's likely to be in October. And the poll that was published in the newspaper over the weekend showed that the so-called Bennett bloc, the people, the parties who are likely to support Naftali Bennett as Prime Minister and will come together in a coalition with him, now number 61 seats, according to this poll, which is, of course, exactly the majority that's needed in order to put Naftali Bennett in power. Wow. Now, last time around, Bennett and Lapid got together as part of a coalition rather as a joint party. But last night it was announced that Bennett and Lapid are now joining forces together and will be on a single list, and Naftali Bennett will be the only candidate as Prime Minister. That Yair Lapid is giving up the right to be Prime Minister. He is granting that to Naftali Bennett, and that they will run on a joint list rather than rely on coming together as part of a coalition. Whether this will generate them more seats remains to be seen, but certainly that's the strategy.
Fascinating times we live in. We're going to have to leave it there for this morning. Thank you very much for your time, Anthony. That was interesting as usual. And have yourself a wonderful day further. And over to Craig for the news.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.